Welcome to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, a podcast to explore and discover the joy of camping and being in the great outdoors.
I'm Allison Logan.
And I'm Steph Pavan. We're your hosts.
This season, we're stepping up our camping game and going beyond the basics. Whether you're an expert camper or you're new to all of this, we're creating a camping community to share the many lessons and stories, tips and tricks, and all the fun that comes with getting outside and fireside.
We're bringing you into the world of camping and inviting you to join the Campfire Committee community. Remember to download, subscribe, and follow us on social at the Campfire Committee so you don't miss an episode or any new fun bits.
This podcast is about camping, and though we camp primarily in Ontario, we would like to recognize the Indigenous past, present, and future with a land acknowledgement for Toronto, where we live and make this podcast.
We recognize that we are on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and this city is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
We also acknowledge that Toronto is covered by Treaty 13, signed by the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaty, signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands.
We always aim to grow our understanding of and respect for the diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada. And we seek to forge better relationships and celebrate this land with those whom have historically called this place their home as we visit these places to camp. And we encourage our listeners to do the same.
Now, let's light this campfire. We live in Canada, Toronto, Ontario to be more specific, which means we live in a temperate climate with four different seasons, though they are becoming less distinguishable, but that's another story for another day.
Most of the time, people think of camping in the warmest season, summer.
I grew up camping, and it was primarily in the summer, partially because as kids we had summer break so we could go on longer and bigger adventures. Not that we didn't get out at other times of the year as well.
Until we started camping together, I thought camping was only for summer.
Like I said off the hop, we're in Canada, so we have four distinct seasons, which means there's four different seasons to camp in.
In this episode, we'll discuss the seasons you may not typically camp in and discuss the many advantages as well as some of the unique challenges of camping at these times.
We're leaving summer behind this episode to focus on the other three. Let's start with autumn. Such a beautiful time of year.
And such an easy extension from summer camping.
Not to mention, you might encounter this weather during the calendar summer, no matter where you are.
No kidding. This type of weather is the reason I purchased a minus 12 sleeping bag way back in our Clairville days.
It's true. It was really cold. Especially at night, even during the summer months.
Remember the Maya Kondo Women's Weekend?
I do. That was such a great weekend. Up north at the overnight summer camp I went to and worked at when I was younger. It's an all-girls camp on a beautiful island where I had some of my favorite summer memories. I worked up there until the year that I decided to stay home and work for the City of Toronto, and we met at Clairville Day Camp. Anyways, back to that Women's Weekend. That particular trip was the first weekend in September, and though it was gorgeous, it was chilly.
What are you talking about, chilly? It was cold, even during the day. That minus 12 sleeping bag of mine wasn't really stretching it. I'm pretty sure it dipped below freezing that weekend overnight.
Yeah, okay. It was an unseasonably cold end of summer weekend. I recall leaving the campfire because it was actually too cold, and people were in winter vests. The campfire was set up on the windy side of the island, and it was on a rocky shore and during a season with very high water. That meant the lake had more surface area, and the water was already pretty cool, and the location left us very exposed.
We were dressed appropriately, but that meant lots and lots of layers. I'm talking hats, scarf, and gloves, the works. I also recall us finding a much more protected area to stare at the stars before heading to bed that night.
Yeah. Key takeaway? We were prepared. Your minus 12 sleeping bag, long johns, scarf, hat, and mitts. You might have been wearing them all, but at least you had them all to wear.
You're right. So, fall camping.
For us, I'd say fall camping falls after Labor Day.
I see what you did there.
Even though we are no longer students, nor do we have children, we both still tend to use the start of September as a marker.
It's no longer peak season. There are fewer travelers and summer vacationers. Many Ontario provincial parks reduce their capacity at this time of year, which cements our date in Ontario at least. They close certain campgrounds entirely within parks, allowing them to reduce their summer staff and operating facilities like washrooms.
It's not only the weekend that marks the start of school, but it's also the last long weekend of the summer, making it a common last getaway for many.
Even if Toronto and southern Ontario can stay warmer, it's our latitude that defines this timing. Far enough north, autumn starts in August, and snow can come a lot earlier than when you're down towards the GTA.
And even this far south, Labor Day can be either warm or cool.
Yeah, it can be a little hit or miss.
We've even had hail on Labor Day.
We are really not selling this.
Okay, so maybe we should just start considering Labor Day a part of the autumn season then.
I'd agree if I hadn't had so many gorgeous September and even October trips.
Okay, so this weather debate can be for another time.
Mm-hmm. Fall camping is one of the best times to camp. Some of the biggest spring and summer camper complaints are non-issues in this season.
Oh yeah, first off, the temperature is cooler. The sweltering days of summer when you want to do nothing are usually gone by Labor Day. That doesn't mean you won't get shorts weather or swimming weather. Sometimes all the way up to Thanksgiving. Canadian Thanksgiving, that is.
Yeah, so we're talking up to early October. And swimming at Thanksgiving would have to be in a heated pool for me.
Yeah, I don't think I'm signing up for any dips in the lake on Thanksgiving. But maybe if it was unseasonably hot. No, even then, I don't think. That said, I know I've done many swims on the May long weekend, so I probably shouldn't count it out.
Just because I might not swim at that time of year doesn't mean that there's a shortage of activities to enjoy or take advantage of. Hiking, if your timing is just right, can allow you to witness the stunning show the deciduous forests of Ontario put on at this time of year. This forest region of Ontario totals almost 3 million hectares, or 3% of Ontario itself.
Oh, it's true. The reds, the oranges, the yellows, they can be so incredible and so vibrant at this time of year. And if you camp between September and October in our region, you're likely to catch some of it.
Canoe or kayak routes can take you through amazing landscapes with trees ablaze with color, and the drive is likely to be spectacular too.
And probably with less traffic than the routes might have during the summer. There are exceptions to this, of course.
Like Algonquin's Highway 60 corridor?
Oh yeah, it's true that once the leaves start to change, up that way can get really busy.
Arrowhead is another one, too, since it's on the way up to Algonquin from the GTA. But these places are the exceptions. Until BlogTO gets a hold of a stunning lookout and everyone has to come up for the gram.
Steph, we totally do that, too. And not that we don't love the gram. We like to post our pictures up there of the places we visit and all of that. But that's another topic. But one that's likely good to get into in the future. You know, the effect of social media trends on visiting particular natural places and things like that.
Oh yeah, we could really dig into that. Totally adding it to the list of future episodes. Anywho, generally speaking, parks and campgrounds are less busy after Labor Day. Less tourists and less visitors. Less capacity. Cooler temperatures. School starting. It all means that the attractions like trails and beaches are also less busy.
In the summer, on popular canoe routes, you can run into traffic jams at portages with multiple groups waiting their turn to get in. You can get yourself way much farther from those access points or the really popular spots to avoid that. Compare those routes to going in the fall, and it's clear sailing. Well, at least if the weather's good. I would say there are a few solid weeks between Labor Day and when the temperatures really start to dip down and you're worried about ice starting, when it's prime time for canoe tripping.
Cooler temperatures mean a few other things, like you're not overheating.
There are way fewer insects.
Activities like hiking and paddling can be way more enjoyable when you're not constantly concerned about your sweat-to-water intake ratio or those pesky bugs. Much more comfortable.
Getting cozy with a fire at the campsite is really nice anytime, but especially when it's cool outside. Plus, there are so many warm meals and drinks, comforting favorites at home that can make great camping dishes too.
Hearty meals like chili, soup, stew, things that can also be prepared ahead of time and just reheated on the campsite. Bonus! Plus, there's hot beverages.
Oh yeah, you've got hot chocolate, hot cider, hot toddies, mulled wine. So many to choose from.
And all great hand warmers. So, let's talk about the challenges of fall camping.
Well, there's less daylight, which can be a challenge for campers on a non-hydro site. In season one, we mentioned that having hydro is a little bit more than just a nice to have when you're camping at this time of year. For some, not having electricity can even be their make or break factor to getting out in the cooler weather. If you're used to summer camping, even in late August, while it may be getting darker earlier in the evening than at the beginning of the season, it's still pretty light out later than when you get to the fall.
When you've got to start using light around 5, it may only be happy hour or dinner prep. Trust me, your night will have to end early if all the lights go out. Mm. And in the shoulder seasons, light may not be the only thing you want power for.
Heat, particularly at night, can make all the difference.
Allison and Ryan had a heated blanket one year in October, and I was so jealous.
Being able to flick a switch and warm up your bed before going to sleep, or, you know, warm up in the middle of the night if you wake up chilly, or again, warm up in the morning before you have to get out of your bed.
Yeah, I already said I was jealous. But then, Allison gave me one for Christmas that year, and it has ended up being essential during outdoor COVID recording sessions or any outdoor social event, as well as cold weather camping.
Ours is at home and has basically been overtaken by our cat bear. We actually have two, and he loves the fluffy coziness of them. We keep both of them without a power cord, either in the corner of the couch or more likely on top of the pillow above my head, his sleep spot, while my feet are just left to dangle off the end of the bed.
Oh, king cat.
Always, always.
Colder temps, though nice to a point, eventually go below the comfort zone for everyone. And it's not so much the cold that can be the biggest issue, but cold and wet.
With wet weather, or even the potential of it, your tarp game has to be strong. We've had Thanksgiving weekends spent entirely underneath the tarp.
And with less daylight, there's less potential sun time for drying. It's always more difficult to set up a tarp in the dark.
When winter's on its way, there's frost and potential snow. Yes, I said it. Snow. Boo. Depending on how far north, or south for any southern hemisphere-ers, snow can be a reality almost any time of year. We'll talk snow more when we get to winter camping. But in the autumn, we are always aware that winter is coming.
But at least after our winters, we can expect spring. So let's head there before we discuss winter camping.
Is there anything else about camping in the autumn that we want to know before we warm up here?
At the beginning of the section, we noted when this camping season begins around here, after Labor Day weekend, but when does it end?
Ah, yes, the sad end. Thanksgiving weekend, or shortly thereafter, tends to mark the end of camping season for many Ontario provincial parks and other campgrounds that rely primarily on car campers.
The last weekend can get pretty busy with people trying to squeeze in that last bit of camping. But I think it's safe to say that as you go from Labor Day to Thanksgiving, you see fewer tent campers out there and you start to notice the nice, warm trailers and RVs enjoying more.
Make sure to look at the campground you're planning to be at to know what's actually open at that time of year. The campground might have its closing date for the season, or there may be more limited facilities available. In the U.S., it really depends on the region you're in and the time of year. Some parks happen to be located in climates that are able to fully operate and function year-round, while others are similar to Ontario and have seasonal closing dates, or specific winter offerings.
Spring, another beautiful time of year, when everything is coming back to life and everyone who has been cooped up all winter is anxiously awaiting the chance to get back outside and fireside.
Many of the same shoulder season weather preparedness applies. Could it be 20 degrees Celsius one day, 0 degrees at night, and then have a high of 8 degrees Celsius the next day?
Yes, and it could also snow. There could be frost well into May, even down in Toronto, so having a warm bed to get into at night with a properly rated sleeping bag, something insulated between you and the ground, and extra blankets.
And even a heat source may be necessary. Camping on the May-long weekend has included a range of weather, from gorgeous sunny days to snow flurries and bundling up with those hot beverages all day long. In spring, everyone's itching to get back out. But when you're camping in the spring, those cold nights and temperature swings do have to be accounted for.
And it's another wet season, but doubly so. You've got winter snow melts and spring rains. Water levels can be very high and water temperatures will be hypothermic, specifically earlier in the season.
Like I said, I've done my fair share of swimming on the May-long weekend, so it's not always that cold. It could be gorgeous, and a dip in the water is just what you want. But you also need to remember that water levels can change rapidly in the spring. So be extremely cautious this time of year around and on moving water, like rivers and streams.
Listen to our Season 1 Car Camping Safety episode for other water safety tips.
There's another thing about spring camping that can be considered a hazard, if you ask some people.
Considered a hazard, eh? What are you talking about? Bugs. Oh, you are so right.
If you're someone who can't handle the summer bugs, you can forget about the spring. It can be absolutely unbearable. I'm thinking Ryan would probably be living in his little personal bug zone shelter that he has, or he just wouldn't even come.
Yeah, I'd be living in a bug zone too. That said, we've camped a couple times in the calendar spring, early June, and when the temps are a little lower than you hope for that time of year, it can mean fewer bugs.
As well as on places like a large lake that have a good breeze.
And for what it's worth, the bugs can be pretty terrible in the summer too, so you just gotta find a way to manage it and hope for the best any time of year.
Okay, so what are some of the things that make spring camping special?
Spring is when everyone gets back out. When the landscape comes back to life, temperatures are warming, there's spring blooms, spring flowers, spring ephemerals if you're out early enough. Everything coming alive again, birds singing, there's more daylight. Need I go on about what makes spring amazing?
I said spring camping, but I guess you really covered a bunch of the reasons why spring itself is amazing and really probably my favorite season. And I guess those would also be reasons why spring camping is great. It's that time of year when everything's in bloom, and like you said, it's incredible. You get to enjoy all the action in nature up close and personal when you're camping.
Yes, and there's animals coming out of hibernation, out looking for food, which, as long as you're bear safe, means increased chances of animal sightings.
Oh, and the young baby animals, too.
Aww.
It may be breeding season or nesting season. You may catch ducklings or other baby waterfowl swimming or walking behind their mothers.
Oh. And with all those spring rains and seasonal snow melts, there could be streams, waterfalls, and wetlands that don't even exist later in the season.
It's a transient season. Things are changing quickly. So if you are a backcountry camper, you do want to note that there could be complete closures of backcountry areas at this time of year. For example, Algonquin's backcountry camping is closed April through mid-May, and depending on conditions, could open earlier or later.
So you might not even be able to camp in some places during this dangerous time of year.
And heed these closures. The wilderness will still be there even if you have to wait a few more weeks until it's safe.
Overall, every individual has their own thresholds for camping. Maybe you book fewer trips in the shoulder seasons or stick as tight to the summer as possible, hoping for the early and late warm weekends of the year.
So back with some trailer camping tips for being in the shoulder seasons this time, we've got Camper Sue.
Hi, it's Camper Sue here. Episode Camping in Different Seasons. Although summer is the most popular time to camp, there's many things to experience in the other seasons. Spring and autumn camping mean fewer people in the campgrounds, but you can enjoy the beauty of the new life starting to appear around you, or the colors and beauty of the forest as it prepares for winter slumber. We've camped at Thanksgiving the last few years and had beautiful sunny afternoons. Last year at Craigleith in particular, warm enough to sit and read and enjoy a glass of wine in the sun. Reminds you of a summer day. Then it cools off and you truly enjoy the warmth of your campfire. The secret to shoulder season camping is to be prepared with lots of layers of warm clothes, mitts, hats, boots. Use wool products if you can, because wool will always keep you warm even if it does get wet. Hypothermia can be a real danger, so take more than you think you'll need and you should be safe and comfortable. We have used our electric blankets under a fleece blanket in the bed of the pop-up to take the chill out of the night air before we go to bed. Winter camping is something I have never done. I'm a bit curious about hot tents, but I'm just as happy to go to one of the camp cabins for a few nights. We've been to Silent Lake a couple of times in the winter and really loved that experience. Maybe we'll be able to try that at a new park next winter. Take care.
Thanks, Sue.
Now, we've talked about fall and spring camping. And even if you enjoy regularly camping in these shoulder seasons, you still need to know one thing. Winter camping lives in a league of its own when it comes to the seasons. And we do mean winter. Camping in winter. We're talking outside. In Canada, in the winter elements, you know, minus degrees in Celsius. If you thought you had to be prepared in the backcountry, well, just throw some winter on top of that and try again.
A lot of snow, minimal daylight, frigid temperatures, frozen waters, dangerous wind chills. The challenge and hazard list goes on, but the magic of being able to be outside during this season is hard to describe. For my mom, though, it was very easy to describe. In her own words, the only thing I can think of worse than camping is winter camping.
Really? Did she say that?
Right from the mouth of the reluctant camper herself.
Reluctant camper. So winter camping is not for everyone, just like camping in general isn't. But just like camping at any other time of the year, camping is about being prepared for the worst and making the best of your trip. So let's get into our last season of the episode, winter.
There are two main ways you can camp in the winter, hot or cold. Cold camping means that you've got no heat source inside your shelter.
Yeah, you know. For cold camping in winter, it's imperative to use a four-season tent. The main differences between a three-season or a warmer weather tent and a four-season are that the focus on a three-season tent will be on that versatility of the tent, it being lightweight, etc. Whereas with the four-season tent, there's really more of a focus on keeping out condensation and its durability. It needs to be able to stand up to harsher weather conditions like the wind and the ice.
Plus, because it's got those sturdier poles and the fabric made to handle snow, generally, four-season tents tend to be larger, which means it'll be heavier as well as bigger to transport and store.
They are larger on average because they are accounting for people being more bundled up in more layers or bulky clothing rather than just summer clothes.
Some tent campers will continue straight through the winter but with electrical sites. This allows the use of electrical heaters and blankets. The same heat-trapping things we discussed earlier, they still apply, but you might need even more. Insulation from the ground, more appropriately rated sleeping bag liners, wool blankets. Okay, I'll admit, this isn't for me. It's one thing to camp when it's warm during the day and cool at night, or cool during the day and cold at night, but cold all the time? Where's the heat? Where's the reprieve?
I mean, if this is for you, good on you. I'd like to give it a try sometime, but again, I think that's maybe more in theory than in reality.
So. Yeah, good on you is right.
There are scenarios where cold camping is required, like it's the only option you've got. In the first episode of the season, we talked about some more extreme camping locations or activities, like backcountry skiing or mountain climbing. You may have to carry all of your climbing or skiing gear or have others help you carry the load. Generally referred to as expeditions, these type of adventures really tend to have a different goal than camping. They camp as a means to reach their goals of climbing up a mountain or skiing down the most remote parts of a mountain rather than the camping itself.
Backcountry winter camping is in this category too, seeing as you'll be hiking or snowshoeing in with all your gear through the snow. You could use a sled to tow your gear and bring more than you could carry on your back, something you wouldn't necessarily do for a longer expedition or be able to do in the warm weather where there is no way for a sled to slide.
Something much larger you may bring with you is a hot tent and stove, which is the alternative to winter season cold camping.
Yes, and if you don't have a trailer or RV but want to be able to properly stay warm in the winter, try out a hot tent.
Hot tents have an interior heat source, a wood-burning stove. The tents can be made of lightweight synthetic materials or of canvas. They've got chimney stacks that go right through the tent, through a stove jack, to the wood-burning stove.
If you ask me, a hot tent is the way to do winter camping.
Mm-hmm.
They're heavy, large, and pretty expensive. Note, they are available to rent in some places, but they are essentially like a little cabin. I've camped in a pretty large one, 12 foot by 12 foot at the base and over 6 feet at the peak. And a little cabin is really what it felt like. And kind of like traveling back in time. There's one large access point and no windows. And though it sounds vast, the space fills up pretty quickly. Also, this tent and many like it don't have a floor, which we'll get into in a sec.
So there are some things you've got to consider with one of these tents. They're only warm when the fire's going. Sure, they block the wind, but they can and do get cold. You've got to burn a lot of wood, like a lot. Think of your regular summer campfire going the entire time that you're inside the tent.
Smaller tent, less space to heat. Larger tent, more space to heat. Smaller stove, shorter burn time. Larger stove, longer burn time. You get the idea. Yeah. You kind of got to size everything accordingly.
Carbon monoxide poisoning is a real danger. You have to have a detector in the tent at all times.
Safety first. When you set up a hot tent on the snow and then heat it up with a big old wood stove for a few days, the snow you're set up on will melt. As a result of the melting but still cold floor, it's a really good idea if you put a barrier between the melting snow and your sleeping areas, everywhere in your tent if you can. The flooring system we used was a regular tarp and foam puzzle pieces.
Sleeping on a cot also lifts you off the floor and provides precious storage space for your gear.
But don't forget to insulate the bottom of your cot, because the air closest to the floor will always be the coldest, no matter how many foam puzzle pieces you have. I used a foam sleeping pad, which worked really well. Our backcountry besties had an inflatable pad on top of their cot, which also worked well.
You've also got to think. You've got to keep things from freezing, even in your cooler. From water to wine, cheese and eggs, things are going to freeze in the winter if it's freezing.
So, add that thing inside your tent. Food prep? Do it in the tent. Cooking? That could also be in your tent. Well, sometimes. Don't use your gas stove inside the tent unless you're at the door and the door is wide open. But better yet, move outside. Need some shelter? Set up a tarp or dining shelter or pop-up for cooking.
And again, you'll need lots of light sources. From late October through early March, it can be dark very early in the day, by late afternoon for sure, and you'll want illumination in the entire tent. A standard propane lamp would be great outside of the tent to light an outdoor area, and that means then you can keep all your batteried or plug-in stuff for inside.
If you usually rely on solar, you may have to switch your game plan. First, there's less light, plus batteries lose power more quickly and won't be as effective in the cold. An electrical site is even more convenient during winter camping, and lighting is just the beginning. That electrical blanket, great on cool nights and mornings, could now be an essential item. And that needs electricity. Kettles, toasters, refrigerators, TVs, you name it. If it's got a plug, you can bring it hydro camping.
Hard-sided trailers, utility trailers, and RVs are able to drive up and plug in, as long as it's an electrical site. Though a lot of people opt to store their trailers for the winter, others go to locations with winter camping available. Roofed accommodations like yurts or cabins are a perfect way to give winter camping a try without having to invest in the gear of the shelter. That is to say, they are great if you can snag one. They are popular to book.
Oh yeah.
If you're going camping in shoulder seasons and during winter, you're out there to enjoy the great outdoors in one way or another. Let's pause here before we talk about keeping yourself warm.
Now we're going to talk a bit about layering. Staying warm is so important when you're winter camping. Temperatures can be dangerously low, so staying safe starts with dressing right.
Starting with the base layers. This is the layer against your skin, and the most important quality of it is that it should have the ability to wick away the moisture, therefore helping you stay dry and warm. Growing up on the ski hill every single weekend, I absolutely love and appreciate a good warm base layer. Got your long undies, your long sleeve shirt, your wool socks. Ugh, so much better when you got those. Synthetic fabrics are often great at wicking and drying fast, but they lose a lot of their insulation when they're wet. They're also not the best at odor resistance, which can be a very bad thing if you were hoping to wear the same things camping for a couple of days in a row. The cream of the crop is merino wool. It's lightweight and warm, as well as odor resistant, which is exactly what you need.
Having never owned any wool leggings or proper base layers, the itch factor is a real issue for me. I wouldn't have believed it, but once you wear merino wool top to bottom, you'll notice the difference immediately. It's so cozy. You can get socks, hats, neck warmers, gloves, everything in merino wool too. It's not cheap, but if you're planning on spending days and nights outdoors, they're worth the investment, bar none.
Next up, we've got the mid-layers. These are the added insulation. Clothing you can remove if you get too hot. Think flannels, fleece sweaters, a sweatshirt, sweatpants, a zip-up long sleeve, a vest. You get the idea.
Finally, it's outerwear. The last layer you put on that will end up being against the elements. These are items you can open and shed if you're hot to keep from sweating too much. This is also the layer that will be waterproof and or windproof.
Exactly. The outer layer is the one that protects you from the rain, the snow, and the wind. So you want to make sure this one is not only got the waterproofing and the wind blocking, but it also has venting action so that those other layers are able to properly do their jobs.
You know those little zippers under your armpits and inside of your legs?
Exactly. So great. Especially when you're doing a hike or doing something active when it's cold. It's also very important to keep your extremities warm and dry. Waterproof, warm winter boots, gloves, mitts, hats, scarves, or neck warmers are all essential parts of outerwear.
Ever forget a hat or gloves on a cold walk?
Yeah, no matter how warm the rest of your body is, exposed ears or fingers can make you very uncomfortable. It's where your body loses the heat first.
So, once you're all layered up, you're prepared for a bunch of outdoor activities you can't enjoy unless there is snow, ice, and freezing temperatures, including snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, tobogganing, skating, ice fishing, and downhill skiing.
You can still hike in the winter, too. If all the trails are packed down, you likely won't even need snowshoes. Insert walking through the snow sound. There will probably be wildlife around, though less than there are in the other seasons. But you can see anything from birds to rabbits to deer to moose. Insert owl hooting.
And tracks in the snow may show you the way. There are a handful of Ontario provincial parks that offer winter bookings for car camping. Algonquin's Mew Lake, Arrowhead, and McGregor, which is, FYI, the only Ontario provincial park to offer seasonal winter camping.
There is one thing that I think is important to call out around winter camping, especially if you're winter camping near a water source that has frozen over, and that's ice.
This goes for all winter adventures. Ice is a hazard. There's no way around that.
Before you go out onto any ice, make sure that you know how to be safe on the ice, including checking the strength, having a buddy, knowing how to do a rescue. We've mentioned in our camping safety episode in season one that water can be incredibly powerful, and that also does go for frozen water.
The last thing you want to do is end up falling through the ice because you acted without thinking or didn't listen to the warnings. Insert ice breaking.
While winter camping certainly has its dangers, the cold temperature being one of the biggest, there are lots of things that make it seem like the most magical time of year to get out into nature for a few days.
The beautiful white blankets of untouched snow, the solitude and serenity in the silence of winter. Plus, I can tell you that a simple cup of hot cocoa or warm soup have never been as satisfying than after a hike or a snowshoe while you're getting cozy once again in the hot tent.
I know spring camping is just about to begin as we're recording this, but this has just made me get excited to go winter camping. I really do think a New Year's winter camping trip is definitely in order.
You know, I've already got a reminder in my calendar for when we need to book us a site for New Year's Eve. Insert ding ding dings or cheers, something to sound celebratory.
Yeah. Guaranteed, the Campfire Committee will be bringing all of you listeners along for this adventure. But for now, I think it's time to wrap up our conversation about camping in the different seasons.
There are pros and cons to camping in any season, from the difference in weather, bugs, site availability, and gear. The nuances are important to consider as you decide when to camp.
And there is no wrong choice. Whether it's cold winter, warm spring, hot summer, or cool fall, if you ask us what season we camp in, we will tell you them all.
Oh, I like that little poem there. Depending on where you live in the world, you may not have four distinct seasons that provide very different camping experiences. But if you are lucky enough to live somewhere with different seasons to camp in, get out there and give it a try in each one of them.
Who knows? Maybe you always thought winter camping was only for the brave and cold-blooded, but it could end up being your favorite.
And you could end up finding a whole new kind of camping gear that you're adding to your wish list and parks you want to try out for a specific time of year.
Speaking from experience there, Steph?
Yes, I'm saving for my own hot tent now, but just remember, no matter what time of year you camp, Mother Nature is in charge. Be aware and be prepared. At the end of the day, the weather you end up with on your camping trip really does come down to the luck of the draw.
So you may as well just get out there and not wait around for that perfect summer weekend.
Book one in spring, autumn, or winter.
That's a wrap on another episode. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember to share this episode with others to help us expand the Campfire Committee community and pass on the love of camping and the great outdoors.
For more, check out our website, thecampfirecommittee.com, and find us on social media at The Campfire Committee.
And join our Facebook group, a place where you can share your favorite memories, places, and ideas when it comes to all things camping. Also, let us know what camping or outdoors topics you want to hear more about in future episodes, your camping stories, and any other feedback you've got.
Join us next time, Outside and Fireside.
And until then, this campfire has ended.
Before we go, we'd like to thank Sue Logan, better known around here as Camper Sue, for her endless camping knowledge, support, and experience.
And Stephen Pavan, our all-in-one editing team. We couldn't do this without either of you.
And to all the extended members of the Campfire Committee, thank you.
All sound effects that are not our own are from thedevo.net.
Music from Epidemic Sound. For more details on all episodes, see our show notes.